Welcome to our celebration of Buddha Day. So it being Buddha Day, usually the talk's about the Buddha. Usually, quite often the Buddha's talk's even about the Buddha's enlightenment. But this one isn't. This one's mainly going to be about Milarepa. I sort of went through my talk with Diana, my girlfriend, last night, and she said, "Oh, great! After 7 or 8 years, I've had quite enough talks about the Buddha's enlightenment. It was quite nice to have a change." But it's also, I realised as I was going through this talk, I think I've got a bunch of different talks I want to give, actually, and one of them's kind of to the order, and this is related to that. I've made it as topical as I can. But it's about the experience of practice. So some of you who are more experienced might get different things out of it than those of you who are newer to Dharma practice. But I hope people will find it useful, whatever your level of experience. And because it's about teachers and disciples, I'd like to dedicate it to my two Kalyana Mitras. I'd like to dedicate it to Achalavedra, who was my main teacher at the Buddhist Centre in Bristol when I used to go along, and to Vasantra, who's poorly at the moment, so it would be nice to keep him in mind. Speaking of poorly people, Tara Bodhi's still poorly, and Suryaketu's going to say a little bit about him. We went to see him last week, so do just keep Tara Bodhi in mind during the day. So as I said, we're going back to the 11th century, which is a bit hard to get your head around. Milarepa was born in about 1025 in the common era. I have no idea what was happening. I tend to think it's the Middle Ages or the Dark Ages or something, isn't it? I'm afraid my knowledge of Western history for that period is a bit... It's when we had kings who were called unready or... Oh, it's just before we got invaded by the Normans, isn't it? Yes, yes, it's around that time, isn't it? So whilst all that was going on over here, over in Western Tibet, a baby was born. He was called Mila. He later became known as Milarepa. Milarepa meaning something like cotton wearing a thin cotton gown. And he's usually referred to as Tibet's great yogi, Milarepa. So in the context of this course, a yogi is a meditator, yeah? Not somebody who very bendy. Although he might well have been very bendy as well. And he's best known for his singing. He after his enlightenment, he communicated a lot of his teachings through singing, and particularly through singing, through sort of communicating the Dharma in a vernacular that was very accessible to people, that made sense to people. And it seems like the text, the 100,000 Songs of Milarepa, and the biography that this story is taken from, was written down around about the 15th century. I was in the National... No, where was I yesterday? I was in the British Museum yesterday. And I took it as an auspicious sign that the first... When you walk into the Asian department, where all the Buddhas and things are, there's a big one set in front of you. The first image I walked up to in Ashram was a statue of Milarepa, which seemed appropriate. And if you come across images of Milarepa, he's usually depicted in the pose of royal ease. Are you familiar with that? Sort of one leg up and one leg down sort of thing. It's a bit hard to do an impression of whilst standing up. And he's usually got his ear cupped, which is said to relate to his sort of singing, but also his receptivity as a disciple. And if you see paintings of him, he's quite often sort of greeny in colour. This is because he's said to have spent 12 years living on only nettles, to the point where it actually turned him green. But the story we're looking at is much earlier. It's before he gained insight. And it's quite a famous chunk of the story about his relationship with his teacher. So I'll just give you a bit of background. Mila's father died when he was quite young. Although on his father's deathbed, what happened is he asked his brother and his wife, so Milarepa's uncle and aunt, to take care of his wife and his son, and to take care of the estate for them, to hand them on to his son when he reached maturity. And his Milarepa's uncle and aunt agreed to do this, and then promptly did nothing of the sort. Yeah, they appropriated the whole estate. They treated Milarepa and his mother like slaves and were really horrible to them, really, really nasty to them. And this went on for years and years and years. Eventually, to sort of cut out most of that story, his mother begged Milarepa, "We don't have any power to get these things back. We need, I want to wreak revenge on these people for what they've done to us, how they've disinherited us, Milarepa also had a sister. And so she encouraged Milarepa to use his psychic abilities, he quite obviously developed psychic abilities, to become a black magician, which he did. And what he did was, on a day, I think it was the day of a wedding celebration for some of the children of his uncle and aunt, he brought a storm, he created a storm, and this storm collapsed, blew down the house that they were in, and killed all of them. And immediately that this happened, Milarepa was overcome with remorse. He realized, he knew something about karma, karma and vipaka, actions and their consequences, and he realized that his actions would have very, very serious negative consequences. He believed that it was, you know, unless he could gain enlightenment in that lifetime, then the consequences were that he would spend an eternity in the hells, an incredibly long period being reborn in the hells for such a vicious act. So he realized that you really had to get on with Dharma practice. And so he sought out a teacher. The first teacher he found was a chap called Rongton, who said, "What you need, Guy, you need the best teacher there is. And the best teacher there is Marpa, Marpa the translator." So Marpa's quite a rum character, as you will find out through the rest of the story. He was a householder, he was married with a family. And he's known as Marpa the translator, because he made a number of journeys over to India to collect texts and then bring them back to Tibet and translate them. And he was a disciple of Naropa. So the three of them are very important. They're seen as the founders of the Kagyu school of Tibetan Buddhism, which was technically founded by Gampopa, who was a disciple of Milarepa's, but the sort of lineage of Naropa, Marpa, Milarepa, Gampopa, very, very important in the schools of Tibetan Buddhism. So, Milarepa. This is a bit like those stories where you give where one tells one story about the Buddha and you can't help but call him the Buddha. He isn't actually Milarepa yet, but for the sake of purposes of the story, I'm going to call him Milarepa all the way through. He finds his way to Marpa, and Marpa says, "Well, I'm not going to teach you. I'm not going to teach you. You've not straight away. I'm not going to teach you the Dharma straight away. You're going to have to make yourself useful around here before I teach you." And what he does is he sets him a number of tasks to do. Most specifically, he asks him to build a tower. He asks him to build a tower. Now, I'll come back to that bit, actually. Yeah, what happens is he asks him to build a tower. What he says is, "Build a tower like this, on the eastern crest of the mountain." So Milarepa says, "Well, okay. I trust my teacher, I'll do what he asks me to do. He obviously knows that this is what I need to do to purify my karma. I'll start on this tower." And so he begins to build a round tower on the eastern crest of the mountain. And he gets about halfway through doing it. Marpa comes up to him one day and says, No, I didn't really think this through well enough, did I? This isn't what you need to be doing. I think you need to take down this tower. You need to put all the rocks back where they came from. You need to put all the earth back where it came from. What you really need to do is build a tower on the west crest instead." And he seems like he might have been drinking a bit. Seems like he might have been drinking, and he's a bit suspicious of this, but nevertheless, he does as he's told. He takes down this tower that he's got halfway through building, puts all the bits and pieces back, moves to the western crest of the mountain, and he begins building a semicircular tower. Yeah, it's a different shaped tower.